Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Rebecca, who is here to speak with us about a recent newsletter article she wrote for Everything is the Buddha. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hi, Jim.
Hey. So likely many folks have read it, but possibly not everyone. So maybe we could start there by you just talking a little bit about the article itself.
Yeah. So the article came out of a deep respect and admiration for the way we do things around here, the structure and the privileged environment. So we had a community meeting, and I was talking about in the article how much I wish this structure for the whole world, because we, you know, when we meet as a community to discuss one thing or another, you know, there is such a decorum and a way that we are together that really models the highest integrity, in my experience anyway, of the privileged environment and the one rule. Mm-hmm. The one rule being that we will use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering. And so in the article, I just had talked about what does happen at those meetings and what doesn't happen. And what does happen is we all look at the issue. I think this time we were looking at something around our menus and meals and things like that, principles. Mm-hmm. And we look at it not from a perspective of I want to get my way or I have a particular point I want to argue or anything, but we look at it from a place of what is best for all, what is in keeping, you know, basically just looking at our process around the content of life. And it was just such a beautiful example of that. And so that's kind of in a nutshell what I had written about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's so, it is such an amazing kind of manifestation, is the best word I can think of practice in action, in the sense of, you know, there is a community, which is a group of people, and there are all kinds of things that need to be attended to. One of them, as you say, being, okay, what are we going to eat, right? And where are we going to shop for it? And how's that going to happen? And what, right? And there's a surprising amount of, anyone who's been part of any organization, including a family, knows how much detail there is to just daily living. Mm-hmm. And what's so extraordinary about what you wrote about and what you're speaking about now is that there is a place where all those things are true. There are all those details, and it's possible to have those details be attended to within the structure of awareness practice, to never lose sight of, as you say, the one rule.
Yeah, yeah. And to have the structure of the privileged environment to support us in bringing out the best in what we want, what the heart really wants. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked in groups and different things over the years about how, oh my gosh, how grateful we are for the silence and the, you know, and just the way in which ego is not indulged in practice. Yeah. And it's at the monastery, but it really, it's throughout practice. Because, you know, you get on those morning radio calls and open air and just any kind of workshop, retreat, anytime we're together. And ego is not indulged. The structure supports us to bring forth our best self and get to look deeply at what, you know, what will lead to our liberation. You know, we're all looking to end suffering. That's the thing we have in common. And, you know, and I just love the utter practicality of it in the setting we're talking about today, which is how it's that best for all place that actually truly exists and is so practical that everybody wins. I mean, I had to prove that to myself when in my family life before I moved here to the monastery. Mm. But I have experience of that place actually exists, and we can find it when we're not identified with ego.
That's high level, right? I suspect that finding it in one's family might be the highest level of frontier there is, which is kind of a commercial for the privileged environment. Oh, I forget the exact title, but the group coaching on privileged environment in our lives.
Oh yeah.
Because that's that's the same
basis
for that.
I can give you the example. Okay. It was such a fun example. So I never, the TV was always just such a source of, you know, because, you know, 90% of the family wanted the TV on all the time, and I didn't, basically.
I was the 10%.
And what, I was the 10%. And what we figured out, or what we came to, I mean, and it just dropped in that way we talk about it dropping in, that we had a room that we were using for something else. And if we were to buy another little small couch and whatever, we could arrange it to where mom would get her quiet time and everybody would have a lovely, cozy place to where they could watch TV, could close the door, and we could still have, you know, it's just like, why had it taken so many, I don't know why it took so many years to find that out. But anyway, that was what, and it was so perfect and so simple, you know, that, and that's in a way, and everybody was on board because we all want the best for each other, you know, all that. And so that was, nobody had to give up anything except that small, I, me, my, what I want, and I don't care what you want attitude, you know.
Which I project is the answer to why did it take so long? Because we don't realize that that's the thing, that's the stumbling block. We're all so trained to think the problem is that you disagree with me and I'm right. Right? Yeah. And meanwhile, that's what you're thinking too. You're thinking you're right and I'm wrong. And there's no, how are we ever going to solve this? Which tells, I mean, speaks everything to the state of the world, right? But what you're pointing at in a structure like practice, and actually, Rebecca, when you were saying, you know, just look at the morning radio shows, I was just thinking how one of the greatest manifestations of it and what people will often comment on is when something practical happens, like you can't, you know, Sherry can't get unmuted, or, you know, Ashwini's call drops, or something happens, and everyone always comments on how, I don't know how people say it, but what I project onto it is, practice stays practice. Like, no one freaks out. No one, you know, we don't need to get urgent. None of the quote rules change. We're just being in the moment with exactly what is, whatever that is.
And, you know, and I want to go back to really crediting the structure of the privileged environment. And because ego would take over all of us if we didn't have the support. You know, it's what Ashwini said in her Musings article, if we stay in the gravitational field of practice, even, you know, we'll be okay. And if we're, you know, so, you know, so that's the image that I loved in that article. And you're right, it does speak to the state of the world, because I remember I had this epiphany about, you know, it was about 15 years ago. I was well into practice, but it was still living out in the world. And it was in the context of some political stuff, where in a 10-second elevator ride, you know, for in the legislature, I was in this elevator with all these wonderful groups, the neighborhood associations and the labor unions and the disabled veterans and the, I mean, everybody, you know, you could tell by their buttons and caps and t-shirts that they were all good people wanting good things for their communities. And in the 5 seconds or whatever it took us to get up to the next floor where we were all going to unload and to go start talking to our legislators to essentially compete with each other for resources, it hit me how the very structure doesn't support the kinds of things that practice and the privileged environment and, you know, and the way we live in community here support. Because you know, they're all good people. But if we don't have the structure of practice, it's just hard to come from that place, you know.
It really is, because as you said that, you know, I was seeing how the privileged environment protects all of us from ego, from conditioned mind, even in ourselves. Because as you say, it's a given that ego is constantly trying to grab the microphone, even through, quote, me, right? And I can completely know that. I can have every intention for that not to happen, and it's still going to happen. That's just how it is, and that's fine. But to have a structure that's set in place that doesn't support that is so, it's such a gift to everyone.
And I think I said this in the article, that I'm convinced the only reason that we have made it as a Sangha all these decades is because of that privileged environment that we all carry within us. It's not anything that's imposed or out there, or it's not a set of rules or not any of that. It's what we all carry within us that we want and that we want to embody. And we can. We know we've been trained well over the years and continue to be trained to embody. Now, you know, maybe not perfectly, but in a way, perfectly, because then even when those little bumps and breaches do happen, we get to see it. And that's part of the training. So, yeah, there's no way to make a mistake, as we're often, as Sherry often says.
Yeah, truly. Yeah. Because at least for me, that just really ups my resolve of how important it is.
Oh, yes, very well said.
I realize, okay, I need this structure. I don't want to be without it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. What a good point.
Yeah.
It's a beauty.
Well, thank you, Rebecca.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Jen.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you to start the show.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Rebecca. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined by Jen. Welcome, Jen.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Michael.
Great, great. And I love that conversation. And it seems to me that the privileged environment is one of the many things that makes this practice unique. And I always love hearing about it.
Yeah, me too. And I think, for at least for me, at base, at core, it really is the thing that brought me to practice. I mean, I never would have articulated it that way early on as a privileged environment, but essentially that realizing that all the things I could see that were, quote, wrong, that felt like they were wrong with the world, I knew that that very process was happening inside of me. And I also knew that I was going to need some assistance with getting past that. But it wasn't going to be just about waving my magic wand and, oh, I see. I need to just stop. I need mine. Okay, got it.
Right. Or reading the book once wasn't going to be sufficient.
It wasn't really going to do it. It wasn't quite going to,
Yes. Yes. Fabulous. Great. And I have announcements here.
Okay, great.
For those who have taken the introductory RL training class, the next magical step is here. True Reflections, a 6-week virtual training in cultivating attention on awareness, will use recording and listening exercises and homework assignments to help us nurture a friendship that will support us throughout our lives. The True Reflections classes start in September.
So exciting.
Yes, yes, great. And coming October 4th, Sherry will lead a virtual workshop based on what she says may be the greatest spiritual practice book ever, To Kill a Mockingbird. The workshop will explore allowing the clarity of that which is to change us, and in so doing, free us from egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. In preparation, Sherry highly recommends that those of you who would like to attend the workshop listen to a recording of the book rather than read it and practice seeing how you are every person in the book.
I will say a giant amen to that, having been participating in doing just that. It's extraordinary.
Yes, yes, it is extraordinary. Reflective Listening Buddies is one of our most popular programs for a reason. There is no other support quite like it for practicing presence, with participants required to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes. And a new quarter starts October 15th. Yes. Is conditioning talking you out of a commitment that you really want to keep? If so, and if you would like some support, sign up for the Keeping Commitments Buddy Program which begins October 15th. Participants will be paired with a buddy for accountability and support during this kind and compassionate training.
Gosh, listening to those, to all that string of things, Michael, it reminds me of what you often say of how we kind of have all of ego's exits blocked or entries, whichever way you want to say that.
Yes, and no doubt adding to that list all the time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, and so for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to get in the queue today to talk with Jen, press *6 and then 1. And a focus on one topic, please, would be great. And conversation of about 5 minutes. Okay, Jen, I think we're ready to start here. You ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Kim from Anaheim.
Hi,
hey, Kim.
Hi. And, well, I was wanting to maybe talk about, well, I just had come across, like, Kundalini, I think it's called, style of meditation with chanting, and if there's any guidance around, well, I guess also I'm just kind of curious why I'm even tempted to add something outside of our structure, because there are so many opportunities. Like, if I'm going to start listening to Kill a Mockingbird, you know, and then on top of everything else, that seems like plenty, but I guess I'm just curious about.
Well, that's fascinating, Kim, that even occurred to you to look at. Well, that's interesting. I wonder what it is that's having me look to add something else in addition. What have you seen about that as you look at that?
Well, It seems like ego kind of wanting to, like, speed things up. Like, can we have maybe something to create, like, a faster transformation, I guess?
Exactly. Maybe if I add this and add this and add this. Right. Yeah.
Yes, because there is so much participation going on, which is great, and also, but still not meeting, like, an ego standard, and I guess I'm still listening to that I thought if I do all this, you know, so there must be something more, and I don't know.
And I don't know if I'm just projecting, but what I'm hearing in that, Kim, is an intuition that might actually be the opposite of what's so, right? So, because first of all, here's one thing we can know. Ego is not interested in speeding up your transformation.
Right.
It's going to do everything it can to throw a monkey wrench into things. And that might be a really good way to throw a monkey wrench into things, right? So, I mean, because if we picture it with anything, right? So, all right, I'm going to run a marathon. I really want to do that. I've never done it before. You know, maybe I'm a jogger, but I haven't really run long distances. All right, well, I set out on a, you know, all kinds of things that can support me in a training program. And something that says, you know what, if you went running 20 miles every day, I bet that would be really good. That would flag our attention, right? That probably isn't going to be very good. Kind of a slow start with this, and then there's this. And as you say, you found this practice, and there are all kinds of ways to support yourself in this practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so ego wanting to come in to say, well, and you could add this, and you could add this, and you could add this, may not be the thing that would actually support us.
Yes. And I definitely see that tendency all over the place where I get really excited and then, okay, well, you know, oh, I love to brush my dog's hair and her teeth, so now every other day, and then just trying to stack in these habits, and then I'm currently not working, so then there's this story of, oh, you know, it's going to be too much. So it's, yeah.
Right. And I don't know about for you, Kim, but for many of us, that eventually ends in not doing it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too much. It's too overwhelming. I mean, I can't brush the dog's hair and teeth every single day and also do all these practices and also do my kundalini and also do, you know what, just forget it. And then before we know it, those things have gone by the wayside.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think maybe it's just time to add a second sit, or maybe I don't need to add anything.
Maybe really. Do you? I can't remember, Kim, if you're doing the year-long retreat.
Mm-hmm, I am. Mm-hmm.
I know you've called in, and I couldn't remember which radio show, so maybe it was that one. But I don't know if you heard the call this morning, but
yes.
Sherry made reference this morning to one of my favorite things. I often quote it. So, but I heard her say it for the first time years ago of, you know, when there's, say, our favorite song comes on the radio, right? We're listening to it. It comes on the radio.
Mm-hmm. I want to turn it up.
The thing is to turn it up.
Yeah.
And it just blew me away the first time I heard her say, what if we turned it down and listened more closely, listened with more attention? And that just dropped in as you were saying that. Maybe it's not about adding things, because you're really, it sounds like you're all kinds of things. You know, the To Kill a Mockingbird comes up, and that, okay, great, I want to do that. And so doing the things that are there to do and doing them with that full, wholehearted attention.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds great.
Yep. And it seems like the other opportunity in it that you describe is, I can't remember how you phrased it, but something along the lines of, but it's not meeting ego standards. And
yeah.
What a great opportunity there to let go ego standards. To not let ego be in charge of, you know, how cool my practice is going.
And that's just by, but to redirect the attention, just recognize that there's that conversation again where, you know, I just snapped at someone, so this isn't working, and just noticing that. And
exactly. So that when you said that this isn't working, say more about that.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. Well, I hear it in there, just this attachment to wanting to, I guess, be a certain way around others, or
exactly
that, if, you know, wanting to get somewhere with it. And it's, yeah. And then, and also a lack of, like, not wanting to see that, like, that I want to be done with that already. I feel like,
yeah,
I've been, oh, but so long that I've been thinking that way, but
exactly. And, you know, to me, that's where recording and listening shines completely, right? Because in every piece of what you just described, like, I bet if you were hearing a good friend or even someone else on the radio show, a fellow Sangha, a person in the Sangha, saying these things, you would completely empathize. You would have great compassion. Oh,
yes.
I wish I could be done with this. And what do we think? Well, no wonder. Who could blame her? And what we know is it takes what it takes. And it's completely all right. It's kind of what Rebecca was talking about, right? So we set out to hold the privileged environment, and then something happens where I say something or do something that I wish I hadn't. But that's okay, because when I practice with it, I see something. When I don't go to self-hate with it, I see something. I'm transformed in that process. That's what we mean by there are no mistakes.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that could really be the avenue in terms of letting go of the ego standards. Truly, it's all practice. So I'm going through my day being as consciously aware as I know as I can be in every moment. And when something happens that kind of catches my attention, you know, something comes out of my mouth that I wished hadn't or whatever, I turn on the recorder and I just say what I see about that. And there's even that place of the two-handed recording, right? Just letting do you know that process of the two-handed recording?
Yes, that's one of my daily practice commitments. And I notice, and so often, I've slipped back into this habit of, feeling like it's like a going through the motions. Like I'm doing it, but, and then I'm even reflecting back, but I'm not but it's like I'm getting to a point where I can reflect back while I'm like cleaning something up, or like some getting just kind of pulled away from really being there.
Absolutely. And you know what's so magical is that's what you notice. Oh, I see what, okay. So the next part of the program is it's becoming kind of run of the mill and rote. And because I'll bet you anything, if you look to see, that's what happens in other areas of your life, right? You start out gung-ho with something, and then it kind of becomes just kind of normal, and it's going through the motions. It doesn't feel the way it used to feel. And all we do is we just, right? We just keep paying attention even through that.
Yes. Great. Okay. Yeah, I can definitely bring more attention
and
there.
And doing a two-handed recording with that, right? The person on the right hand can say, gosh, you know, I mean, obviously I'm making this up. It would be however it is for you. But, you know, it used to feel so kind of big when I did the two-handed recording, and now it just feels kind of blah, and I don't really know what's shifted. And in other words, letting yourself just completely go to that place with what's going on right now, that's what the right hand can express, and just see what the left hand has to offer with that.
Wonderful. I'm so glad I got on. Thank you so much. That I just see, this wholehearted participation opportunity where our ego was trying to say, no, let's add more things for you to have to do.
Add more things for you to have to do. Exactly. Oh, it's so good. Really, yeah, it was a great catch. Thanks for calling in with that, Kim.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Gesho.
All right. Gesho.
Thanks for joining us, Kim. And Jen, it's great to catch that scam of doing more and doing
subtle.
More. Yes.
Very subtle, especially in cultures like ours where, I mean, we're just all completely trained that way. More is better. Try harder. Bigger. High Western achievers. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. While at the same time, we're supposed to look like we're not trying hard at all and relaxed and
right,
all that.
What's that, you know, that old deodorant cartoon. I mean, not cartoon, advertisement. Never let them see you sweat. Right,
right. Exactly. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Oh, hello.
Next caller. You're now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Erin in Massachusetts.
Hi, Erin.
Hey, Erin.
I've had an interesting day where I've sort of used a lot of the practices that I've been learning to handle some, stuff happening in my life and saw some interesting stuff, so I'm really thankful for that, but my day ended, well, it's not over yet, but my day ended with, you know, accommodating somebody in my family in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I asked for something, the person said, well, you know, all the things, you're mean and... And, you know, I never get what I want and all this kind of stuff. And I was really, like, stunned. And I don't want to do it like a tit for tat. Like, I don't want to do that.
Right. I gave you all these things, and you can't do this one thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like, I'm really not there in my head.
Let me just pause. Is the background noise in your... Do you hear that background noise?
I do, and it's not me.
Oh,
I've got crickets as my background noise.
Okay. So we might have someone else unmuted, Michael.
Yeah, looking. I'm not seeing anybody, but I'll keep an eye out.
I do know that experience, having been on your end of it, where it doesn't look like it.
Okay, I'll keep looking.
Great, thank you. So will you say just that last sentence, Erin?
Oh, yeah, so it's like I'm not... doing like tit for tat, right? But I just wanted a way to, I was working really hard today and on like seeing sort of through all the stuff around people so that I could just see them for who they are and like appreciate people for like their true self. Like, and I had a couple of really interesting moments today with that, which is why I wanted to call in. And then tonight, you know, one of those same people sort of gave me this hullabaloo, and I was really like, I didn't know, I guess I'm calling for sort of guidance on what even to say, like how to interact.
Well, let me ask you this, Erin. How are you being with you through it? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I might have said something that I was trying to say back, like, we've accommodated many things today, and I'm looking for this thing. And I was trying to say it kindly, but I don't think it was perceived. So I really didn't want to just sort of roll over. I wanted to still say, oh, I have thoughts and feelings and needs as a human myself. So that's always the thing. It's like, maybe that's sort of the bigger question is like, you know, all the work we're doing has been, I mean, so helpful for me. Yet I get stuck. I get these moments where I'm like, I can't like be Zen today. And actually, interestingly, we got home and I ate two pieces of pizza, which I never do. So I was like, ooh, I went right into mindlessness. I went right into like getting away from my true nature by eating pizza. I was like, I gotta shut it down.
We can go, as we were talking about with Kim, we can go to a who could blame her kind of a place. And again, Erin, I'll ask you the same question I asked Kim. I can't remember. Are you in the year-long retreat?
Yeah.
You are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know that day. In fact, it was yesterday's assignment that we looked at today, which is the two bad choices place. It sounds to me from what you're describing that this is a classic example of where you're offered two bad places, two bad choices by ego, right? Because there's really no quote good way for you to handle this.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And it's so interesting, the thing you just said a minute ago is, you know, I'm not able to be very zen about this. And it's funny, I just read something recently that someone sent me, but, you know, there's this idea of what zen is. And first of all, who could even touch that with a 10-foot pole to try to say what zen is? But it's much easier to say what it isn't. And what it certainly isn't is, again, like we were looking at with Kim, trying to meet some standard that the voice in my head says I need to meet in order to be the right person with my family members, in order to meet some standard of what it calls kind, which, of course, it has no intention of being kind. It's only using that because I care about kindness, and so that's a way it can torture me. But in other words, I end up being kind of, you know, balled up into a pretzel because there's no good way out of this situation.
And earlier in the day I was, you know, doing the homework for the year-long retreat, and I was, you know we're letting go of things, and I actually had sort of an epiphany where I was sort of being flummoxed by someone's behavior, and suddenly I was like, oh, I don't have to know what to say to them. This is a different person. I don't have to know what to say to them or coach them or help them. I can just see, like, I can see the person inside there. And it's like it all fell away. All of my worries about how they were behaving, and it just all fell away. I was like, oh, I just see the person there.
Yes.
But I wasn't able to do that tonight with this other person.
And again, like we were talking about with Kim, that's okay, right? And because it's that place of, you know, I'm learning to play tennis, and wow, that serve, that was a brilliant serve. And maybe the next one won't be. But that's, why would I'm not going to expect it to be, right? I'm learning to play tennis. Mm-hmm. Same thing here. Right. And right. The other thing that really strikes me, Erin, is that that's such a beautiful description that you had. I mean, essentially, you dropped into being here, it sounds like, and suddenly you were mm-hmm. able to see that person. And I think what's ultimately available to us is we can see ourselves in that way. So in the same way that you are suddenly able to just see that person, and so, you know, whatever they did or said or whatever, you're not confused about their authenticity. Well, same thing here with Erin, right? So she, quote, handled the situation however she handled it, but that doesn't mean anything about her authenticity, who she actually is. And we can actually practice to see ourselves that way, to experience ourselves that way, which is what the second recording listening class is all about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I can definitely see with these two situations, there's a lot of projection going on also.
Oh, sure.
Me watching them, watching myself, watching them.
Being watched by ego, right. All of it being watched by ego, being filtered through ego. And I project mm-hmm. what happens for us, Erin, is that as we do, you know, so much of the focus becomes on, you know, okay, how can I be kind to other people? How can I not take my stuff out on others? Because that's what I really want, you know. So sort of our goodness is used against us in the ego system.
Mm.
And so it all becomes around kind of our behavior, and we start to watch ourselves and make sure we don't do this and make sure we're that way, which, of course, doesn't ultimately work because, first of all, that's not a fun way to live, to be constantly watched like that, to be monitored all the time, and mostly a huge portion of the time being told, no, you're wrong, either outright wrong or, no, could be a little better. And occasionally we get it right, so that proves that we can't get it right, so we just need to try harder and things like that. But that place, right? But that place you described that you dropped into today with that person where you're suddenly just here, so often the, quote, solutions to the situations in our lives simply come from being here. And when we're here, we tend to feel cared for and loved and all those things, and then we interact with the people around us from those places. And does that mean, again, I think Sherry was talking about this just this morning, does that mean we're, you know, we meet ego standard all the time? No, not at all. But we learn to let that go, that doesn't need to be the lens through which we're seeing ourselves and everyone else in our lives.
Hmm. Okay. So, I mean, a sum up for me is like, it's not so much about like what I could say. I'm always like working on what is a thing to say, but really all of this can fall away. It's like I can just be in the moment, experience this moment, and like then an answer will come to me.
Yes, and you'll quote, do whatever you do, and that and one of the huge things we talk about, especially in facilitation training, and we talk about how facilitation training is basically life training. No reviews, no reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just you're as present as you can possibly be, and it goes however it goes, and then you move on. And if you want to record and listen about it, great. You know, offer support to Erin through it, and maybe you have insights around it, which very likely, in my experience, when the self-hate starts to fall away, there's an avalanche of insights and awarenesses because there's so much there to see, and it's all just interesting. It's just information.
Mm-hmm.
But no reviews, no ego reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a huge way to begin to practice with it. You set an intention. You know you want to be as present as you can possibly be. So you go, do the best you can with that, whatever happens. And then you start to hear the review because ego's not going to let that, you know, bone go easily. And then that's your cue to go, nope, not doing that. No reviews.
Right.
Nope, I'm just letting life lead me in this. No reviews.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And definitely report back. We can all plug in our content to what you're describing for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Erin. Take care.
Thank you.
Go happy.
Thanks for joining us, Erin. And Jen, it's when I say the most favorite aspect of practice. You know, that's a list of about 100 items. But up near the top there has to be no reviews and no feeling bad, because that is like a magical secret to life.
It really is. And a crucial ingredient of awareness practice. We cannot have a conscious, compassionate awareness practice without it.
Yes. Yeah. I agree completely. And just incredibly helpful. And we are going to hear from our sponsor, Jen, and then we'll come back and talk with some more callers here.
Great.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Jen, I'm just getting the queue organized here.
Mm-hmm.
And here
no
we
hurry.
Go. Okay, here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Chris calling from Boston.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris. It's a Massachusetts evening.
Yes, it is. Hi, Michael. Hi, Jen. So I could really relate to what the first caller was talking about with just filling in empty time with commitments and not in a practice way, but in the ego way of doing that.
Right. More doing. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And what I've noticed is it's really come up in the pandemic because I find myself adding. So first of all, it's different schedule right now, quite empty. But then there's room to add in things for work or, you know, just other kind of commitments to add in that way. And what I hear in my head is that that's a good kind of right person thing to do.
Aha. Uh-huh. So when there are those spaces, that's good to add things in, you know, more work or more practice things or more whatever. Put things in those spaces.
Right. And it's usually the impulse is usually with work things, you know, because that's, and then kind of practice can be squeezed in between, but the good right person thing is to put in the work things.
I see. That's the good person thing to do. Put in the work things. And it's fine to squeeze practice in between, but work is that's the good person thing.
Yes, exactly. And and I've just been noticing how there's really no end to it. Like there's just, there won't be a point where ego kind of dusts its hands off and says, okay, you did it. You reached the end.
Exactly. That's good, Chris. That's a good pull. You've got the right balance there. It's never going to say that. I was just looking at that the other day, Chris, that you know how people will say, how long will it take? It'll take however long you have. That's how long it will take. So,
oh, that's perfect.
Right? It's going to take up all the space there is. That's just how ego runs.
Wow. Yeah. It just does that. It'll fill up until the last minute of the window that you give it.
That's right. And preferably to have a little bit, at least a little urgency there at the end.
Always, yes. well, something dropped in as a way to be with this in a different way. And I don't know if I imagined it or not, but I remember hearing a story. It's a good story either way. In the early days of practice, when people would not, like, let's say there was no one for meditation, that Sherry would still go and ring the bell and sit and show up for that practice regardless.
Yes. At the time that it was on the schedule, 7:15 p.m., it's time to lock the door because, you know, if you're not in the meditation hall by then you're late, so you wouldn't be joining the meditation. So maybe I'm the only person there for meditation. That's fine. I still put the sign out that says meditation in progress. I lock the door. I ring the bell at the time of the meditation. I meditate for the 30 minutes. I say the recitations, etc. I do everything. It's a structure that Rebecca was talking about. I hold the structure for myself. Yeah. And so it sounds like you're seeing a way to apply that principle to this situation.
Yes, exactly, because it feels like a kind of new way of doing things, or not, you know, a new way to be with my time, right, rather than just the only way that I've ever known, which is just fill it up and be productive.
And productive has to be in quotes, right? Because the productive is by ego standards, what it calls productive.
Oh, yeah. Right, because that's how the negation happens, I make a commitment to, record and listen in the evening, let's say, and then when it comes time, if I'm behind on my email inbox, it's really, really easy for ego to get me and say, well, no one will, you know, what will that do? I mean, this is concrete. You have to clear up this inbox, but what will that, you know, recording, listen, that can, you do it later. And then it's like a negation of showing up in the way that, in that story of showing up no matter what for yourself.
That's right. And I'm going to guess somewhere along the way, Chris, it's going to come in to try to criticize you. See, I mean, you're not really practicing. You said you were going to record and listen and you didn't.
Right, it has to add in that final kind of nail in the coffin at the end. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's brilliant. If I'm following what you're saying, essentially you create a schedule for yourself. And just like you were at the monastery. And just like, you know, you're showing up for you. So in a way we could say, because I was thinking that as I said a minute ago, you know, we hold the structure for me, for one person. But there's a way in which it's much bigger than that. You know, yes, I am the main beneficiary, but we have a sense that on whatever level, it's much bigger than just me. It's a huge support. Again, going back to kind of what Rebecca was saying, that there are people in the world who are coming at life from that grounded place is extraordinary. So there you are. Maybe it's just you in your household, but you have a schedule. And so at 6:15, you know, whatever it is, you know, you're going to record and listen. And so, I mean, I just pictured even at the monastery, I think, as you know, we ring three bells before every activity. So 15 minutes before each activity. So, okay, 6:15, I'm going to be recording and listening. So I go ring my bell at 6 o'clock to remind me that I have 15 minutes to transition and get ready for my recording and listening time.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, and just like you're saying, it's more than just, you know, there is the level of how it impacts this life experience that I know most intimately, but similar to a call a couple weeks ago on Open Air, someone was talking about how when we showed up to practice, there were people practicing who could model it and offer it, and
that's right.
So we can make that movement to also remember that it's not just about me. It could impact people in 10 years if I happen to call in and say something on the radio show.
Exactly. And that you're practicing And what you're looking at right now is space in your life and what ego does with that. And then because you're practicing, it drops in to work with this schedule in this way. Chances are really good that there are other people listening right now who are saying, wow, that is so happening for me. That is such a, I want to try that too. And then as you say, this is going to go up on the archives. And, you know, 15 years down the road, someone is listening to this. And you know that thing where people say, I just chose a show at random and exactly the thing I needed to hear was on it. So, yeah, exactly. It's just everyone's practice becomes available to all of us.
Wow. Well, that is such a wonderful reminder, because ego can make it so, like, we will do for the love of others, but it...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you're at that choice point where the voice says, I mean, what's recording and listening going to do? You can do that later. I mean, you've got to do work. You've got to... And what we remember is, even if we take that word productive, I mean, if what I'm doing, if the base of my life is to realize that it is possible to wake up and end suffering in this very lifetime, what could be more productive than attending to my practice, than being present and aware and here?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and that's just that is such a helpful reminder, because it's really important to remember what I actually want and not kind of get walled away by my automatic ego route that can be taken.
Oh, so true for all of us. To remember what I actually want and not get taken away by that ego conversation. It's just habit to listen to it, to believe it, to act from that place. You know, I can't remember what the book is, but there's a famous personal development book where this fellow interviewed, you know, wildly successful folks, people who did big things, like Henry Ford, who, you know, creating the car. And one of the things he discovered was that one of the common elements for all of them was that they, multiple times a day, they reminded themselves of what they were doing. And it's so funny, because he's saying, you know, I'm guessing that Henry Ford didn't forget that he was creating, that he was looking to invent a car. So it's not literally I forget, but I forget what I'm about. I forget the priority.
Oh.
I forget the, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that is so important and helpful to just remind ourselves what we're aspiring towards, you know, the direction, the compass.
Yes, all the time, because that's what's going to help us calibrate to those micro choices that we're making all day, every day. The quality of our lives is determined by the focus of our attention. That's what that is.
Oh, wow. I've not seen it from that angle before, but that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, that gives me...
It just gets sown moment by moment by moment by moment, one way or the other.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And everything becomes practice. You know, everything is...
Yes, exactly. Yes, everything becomes practice. Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you. That gives me lots to look at in the next...
Yeah.
The next time.
Lifetime.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Exactly.
Yep.
And again, do report back, Chris, because it's a really fun adventure that you're setting out on, I project, and that I bet lots of us can relate to it and benefit from what you see as you go forward with it.
Oh, I definitely will report back on that.
Great. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Go happy.
Go happy.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. And Jen, that was a fabulous explanation of the word productive and what that means, and how it's used as a weapon against us, and how we can use it for what we want.
Yeah. Exactly. Remind ourselves, okay, let's see, good point, productive. What would be the thing that would most assist me? Let's see, I want to be ending suffering. Okay, what would be the most productive thing I can do towards ending suffering right now?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, sitting and being with the tree. Thank you.
Yes. And we have another call here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, Jen. It's Karen from California.
Hi,
hey,
Karen.
Michael. Hey.
Hi, Karen.
Hey. Boy, I felt like the good news update was just for me, I guess you'd say. It was just for me because I'm in the year-long retreat, I'm letting go of, I don't know how to say this, but, well, my agenda or Karen's agenda or having an agenda, that kind of thing. And and I actually, right now, all I'm doing, I'm not sure how to let go of it. All I'm doing is seeing it, seeing how huge the agenda is.
Yes.
Oh, my word.
Yes.
And
you know, Karen, that's so great because I was looking at that too with, you know, with this focus this month, we're talking about letting go and not to, it would be easy to skip the noticing part to assume, well, letting go, that seems like an action. So I need to be letting go, but actually seeing everything around it, that's really the tofu of it, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, someone was talking about opinions on one of the recent radio shows, and that really sort of caught my ear because I think that something was said sort of like all thoughts are opinions. And for me, I would say everything is the agenda. Everything serves the agenda. That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
And it's a visual for me looking at the agenda. It's like I just got to talk about this on a Reflective Listening Buddies call, so I'm really fresh and looking at it. But it's the visual. Is the agenda is this great big giant tornado, and swirling in it is all like all the stuff. You know, like I want everybody to be okay. I want all the people, especially my family, to take good care of themselves and tend to their health. I want, you know, like all the things I want and I might know what's right for somebody. All those things just swirling around in the agenda. And then I see that where I end up is that because I've never seen this connection. I have this thing about I've had overdeveloped sense of responsibility, and I realize the agenda drives it because if I push the agenda, and things don't go right, that's terrible. And if I don't push the agenda and things don't go right, I'm responsible. And that's not fun either. I mean, it's just like no matter how, it's like I'm responsible for how life turns out for people. And isn't that, it's horrible to look, I mean, it's really good to look at, but it's like,
to me, it just evokes enormous compassion for the person who's stuck in the middle of that tornado.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's to be, let's see, I'm not even sure what word to use there. I mean, that could be torturous to be told all day, every day, you know, because again, what it's using is our goodness, right? It's using the love that we have for these people.
Yeah.
Right. And you are responsible for them and you've got to make sure that they're staying safe and you know what's good for them and you've got to make sure that they do that. And if you don't, you know, blah, 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 but be careful. You better make sure you do know right, because if you don't know right and you tell them and then something goes wrong, then you're really responsible.
Oh, yeah. And it uses it like I have, you know, content right now with my 95-year-old mom and trying to make some decisions. And here we go. You know, and I mean, it has to do with your health and safety and, you know, and I think she need, you know, I don't think she understands and all those things. And then here comes the, and it's like, I don't want to push the agenda. Then comes the good news update. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, that's what I want. I just want to, because I don't know. I mean, the thing about the agenda is I don't know how anything's going to work out ever.
No, none of us does.
Yeah, but the agenda implies that somehow I do, but I don't.
But I don't. And does it seem like there's a place, Karen, where that could actually be a relief, to be released from needing to know?
Yes. Yeah, there is, because, you know, all this sort of happened today, you know, just I've been looking at this and I'm looking at the agenda and then here comes the good news update. And I had arrived at that, I actually don't know. And I actually can say that out loud. I'm not sure if I have, when I'm discussing it, I'm not sure if I have an agenda here. And I actually don't know what's best. And I'm, you know, I actually don't know. And it's just, it really is a relief because it takes, number one, it takes responsibility off of her, you know, like, because she's absolutely admitting she doesn't know. And then there's recording and listening and there's, you know, the pausing and praying and there's the, all the practice ways to work with it. And so it's been really, really helpful. All of these, I can't believe how everything is related, you know, everything's connected.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's the best. It's the best, truly.
Yeah.
And so, given what you've seen tonight and kind of all the things that, as you say, so applicable, does it feel like, well, it sounds like it does. I was going to say, does it feel like it gives you some concrete ways to work with it? One of them sounds like actually in the conversation with, quote, external people, that you can actually say, gosh, I'm just kind of exploring here. I don't really feel like I know exactly. And I would imagine even say, you know, what I really want is just the best for everyone, kind of Rebecca's TV example. All right, let's all get on the same page here. And because we all want what's best, so let's put our heads together here and look at this together.
Yeah, and really listen to my mom in it, too.
Yes.
You know, really let her, I mean, it's her life, and really let her guide things. And I do really want what's, you know, I want what's most compassionate for everybody, absolutely. And, and it's a really big, it takes the suffering out of it. I don't know what to do, but I know I don't have to push anything. And I have like a week to just sort of be with this and work with it. So, so it does feel really compassionate to me at least.
Yeah, and it sounds compassionate. You know, not to say that this is what you would do, but I'm always reassured when Sherry talks to someone when there are big life decisions, and then she always throws in the piece of, and then, you know, there's always the toss the coin thing.
I know.
And the reason I find that so reassuring, Karen, is that I imagine, like most folks in Sangha, I have deep abiding respect for Sherry Huber for the centered place that she's able to see from and offer that.
Yeah.
And the fact that she would offer that as a truly viable option is so reassuring to me, that because it feels like it underscores there is no right or wrong decision in anything.
Yeah.
It's kind of, again, like kind of like Rebecca was saying, we don't throw the rules out the window when it's, quote, a big thing. It's real. Okay, but when you're talking about this thing, now we can't flip coins because that would be terrible. No, yeah. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and this decision, it's like if it didn't work out, we could change it. It's not X. I know. And then the other thing I think of what Sherry has said so many times to me, and I've heard her say it to others on this show, is just don't think about it. Just get out of the conversation. I'm not having this conversation. And just let everything kind of settle and be and be as present as I can be and see what might drop in from life about all this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so perfect. It takes me back to the conversation with Aaron, where we're so trained to really look at, but what am I going to say? Because, when this person, wants to pushing back, what am I going to say? And that place of, now going back to the musings article, that place of faith, right?
Yeah.
And that to just really just go back to, we're just practicing to be here. And
yeah.
We're here, really, everything is how it is, and it's all right. We're adequate to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been a fun practice day. So, boy, I sure am grateful and glad I got to talk about it tonight. And just feel like it's all going to be okay. And it is okay.
It is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, that's a great recording to put on repeat, right?
Yeah.
It's all going to be okay, and it is okay. It's all going to be okay, and it is okay.
Well, thank you, Jen. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Karen. Good night.
You're welcome.
So happy.
Thanks for joining us, Karen. And Jen, we are 3 minutes to the top of the hour here.
Yeah, maybe we'll just know we're going to do one short interaction. How does that sound?
Okay. Sure. Let me bring on another call here.
Hi. This is Andrea.
Hey, Andrea. You are now live on the air, and would you... Hey, Andrea.
Hi.
hey.
We talked not too long ago.
We did. Got a quick update for us?
Actually, it's along the lines of the retreat, which is... So what I'm seeing is that in terms of the two bad choices, that what I'm working with is letting go of the conversation.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, and what I've seen is that the two choices are, one, this is from an ego perspective, is to, one, be in conditioned mind and be in drama, but suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then the other choice is to be present, but be bored.
Uh-huh. Again, presented like that, neither choice sounds terribly appealing, does it?
No.
Uh-uh.
And for me, I think it's a really stark and big realization because I think that's kind of the root of a lot of stuff for me. And and a root of, addictive tendencies of trying to distraction of. And I think it started.
Oh, that's so big. Yeah.
Yeah. It just, I think it started at a really young age.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think it started with, daydreaming and telling myself stories to amuse myself.
Yeah. Wow. And I'm projecting when there's something that you see that's that big and that has that much impact, that can be an exciting place to be in our practice, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think what I'm looking at now, is with the assignment today, I think I tend to have a blank when it comes to what's the alternative, what And so I see that there's resistance from ego, but I really think the alternative is if I drop the belief that being in the present is boring, then maybe I'd get to see what it's like.
Exactly. Get to have your own direct experience, which is handy because it's what will just automatically happen when you're letting go of the conversation with conditioned mind.
Right.
Yeah.
Because maybe when I think I'm in the present or I'm trying to be in the present, you know, I'm still stuck in conditioned mind saying it's boring.
Exactly, which is a huge clue. The present is not boring. We hear really strong rumors about that, right?
Yeah.
And so we can know if I'm in a conversation about being present, if I'm trying to be present, that's not the same as being present. Now, the Aikido move, at least for me, there is not to make myself wrong there, right? Not to listen to any ego story that says, well, then get present. You've got to get, it's just information. Oh, okay, so that's not the here we're talking about. And then I just do whatever I do. I record and listen. I come back to the breath. I sit with a tree. That's where all of our many, many tools come in, where I just go back to, well, what I'm practicing right now is letting go of the conversation so that I can have my own direct experience of presence.
Yeah, because what I'm also noticing is that even if I think that, what I've noticed actually from this retreat is that there's a belief that my subpersonalities are, that part of ego is, you know, strong feelings. But really, I think that there could also be that part has that belief. Who's that?
Yeah. Oh, there's going to be so much to explore as you get into this, I project. It's really fun.
Yeah.
So thanks for being with us tonight to give us that update. That's great.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Andrea. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. And as Sherry would say, Jen, no reason to be bored.
Exactly. well said, Michael.
Well, it just dropped in, so came from there.
Yeah, exactly.
So thank you, Jen. Thank you, Jen, for joining us tonight. And thanks to all of our callers and listeners. All right. Go happy.
Go happy. Good night.
Good night.